This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The first round of retail marijuana stores is open and running in the Commonwealth. Regulators are now working on rules for additional ways to buy and sell cannabis, including home delivery service and cannabis cafes for social consumption. Here to discuss what's ahead is Cannabis Control Commission Chairman Steve Hoffman. Chairman Hoffman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. I think we have to start by talking about the proposed regulations for home delivery of marijuana. The public comment period on these and other guidelines ended last week, and it generated a lot of controversy. So maybe you could start by just walking us through what those proposed home delivery regulations are.
So home delivery is an important topic. It's one that we've been working on pretty much for the entire history of the commission. So when we did our initial regulations, draft regulations in December of 2017 and final regulations in March of 2018, in the initial draft, we did approve home delivery based upon the same public comment period that we just went through. We heard a lot of concerns about that, and we agreed to defer home delivery until the next round of regulations, which is what we're doing right now.
Okay.
So we put a draft set of regulations around home delivery in place specifically so that we could get comments from people both that attended our public hearings as well as people that submitted comments in writing to the commission. And as you just said, there's a lot of controversy over this issue, and it's on all sides. It's not that all the opinion is in one side. It literally is coming from all different sides of perspective. But this exactly the way the process is supposed to work, in my opinion. And what we're going to do is we're going to digest all of the comments that we got, and we're going to meet in public, as we always do, the second week in September, and we'll decide how to go forward, whether we make changes to our draft regulations or not, based upon the comments. But there's no kind of algorithm. It's really using our best judgment based upon the comments we've heard from all sides of the spectrum.
Some of the details there. So you have to come into a shop first and pre-register
to verify.
ID. You take home delivery. The vehicles have locks, boxes for cash and marijuana.
Correct.
There are cameras in the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But every delivery person also wears a body camera.
That is in our draft regulations. Correct.
Right. So when I receive a delivery at my door, that transaction is filmed and stays on record according to the draft regulations for 90 days and is reviewable by the commission and law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
So that's pretty restrictive.
I don't know if I would use the word restrictive. It's we're trying to be balanced and careful here.
Why?
As I said, we heard a lot of pushback when we did our draft regulations back in December of 2017 on delivery, concerns about both public safety as well as concerns about public health, about making sure that the individual that ordered is the one that actually receives the marijuana, that it's not diverted to people under 21. We're trying to find the balance here. And what we did is we put forth the draft regulations to the best of our ability, using our best judgment, knowing that it was going to be a controversial issue and wanting to hear from all sides, as I said, of the spectrum, so that we can get back together and discuss it. And I think we're going to have a thoughtful, balanced, I think it's going to be a pretty intense conversation amongst the five commissioners back in the second week of September. And I don't frankly know how it's going to turn out, but we're going to listen to everybody that had something to say on this topic.
So I was really struck by sort of, okay, so if you study negotiations, you know, you sort of anchor hard at the beginning because then it gives you more room to move. That seemed like a pretty hard anchor.
I'm not sure it was a negotiating tactic, quite honest with you. I understand your point, but
cameras, that's a big deal. We don't do body cameras for alcohol delivery.
We don't. And part of the issue with cannabis has always been, there's some analogies to alcohol, no question about it. But the biggest difference between alcohol and cannabis is that cannabis is federally illegal. And one of the big implications of that is that banking services are limited. It tends to be much more of a cash business. And therefore, I think public safety concerns are greater
on the
in some respects
side,
on the cannabis.
So on the flip side, though, with the federal government being pretty clear that it is not in favor of state regulations making it legal.
Right.
Doesn't it severely suppress the market for people to be videotaped and have that digital coverage held?
I think there's concern. This is what our job is. And as I said, I wish it was easy. I wish there were black and white answers. But you have, on the one hand, people that have the concerns that you just articulated, and I think they're very valid. On the other hand, you have the law enforcement community and others making very strong and compelling arguments about the public safety risks they think delivery creates. And we're trying, as I said, in everything we've done, not just on body cameras and delivery, we're trying to find the balance. We're trying to find the right balance. And I can't as I said, say that there's an easy formula to get this right. But I will say two things. One is we listen to everybody that has something to say on this topic, and we take their comments seriously and give them heavy weight. And we'll have a robust public conversation and discussion about this before we come to a final decision.
Is there reason to believe from other states, for example, that there is a really increased likelihood of, for example, assaults on delivery drivers
or theft? There's not a lot of data from other states about delivery.
I wondered about
that. We're a little bit ahead of the curve on both delivery and social consumption. I mean, there's some early experimentations. Oregon has home delivery. Colorado is now doing the early stages of social consumption. But we unfortunately don't have a lot of data or best practices from other states. We're a little bit ahead of the curve.
Okay. So I want to do one more question on that, and we'll move to some other areas. You know, Massachusetts has been arguably on the leading edge of the social equity dimensions of implementing marijuana in the Commonwealth. One of the things that comes up with the issues around privacy and home delivery is, will it disproportionately disadvantage or put in harm's way from a privacy standpoint, you know, people maybe who are veterans or work for employers who are against marijuana usage, or maybe somebody with questionable immigration status, et cetera. What is the social equity dimension of that?
Well, it's interesting because the other flip side of home delivery is it really is about social equity in terms of opportunity. You know, we do have explicit mandates in the legislation about creating opportunities for people that have been disproportionately harmed by the previous prohibition on marijuana. One of the challenges, and we've given out 118 or 33 prioritization rights for people that meet those criteria. Not many have applied, and one of the big problems is they don't have capital, and there's no lending going on in this industry. Delivery is actually probably the lowest capital requirement of any of the kinds of licenses.
Meaning you need less money to get into the home delivery business.
Exactly, and so it's a very important thing from a social equity perspective in terms of it creates an opportunity.
But how does that work if one has to go into a retail operator to pre-register? Don't you then need the amount of capital you would need to be a retail
operator? The delivery services are going to be responsible for the vans, the drivers.
Oh, so you might be like a subcontractor.
So, exactly. They're going to contract with the retail, at least in our proposal. And again, that is under debate in the next couple of weeks. But they don't have to set up the brick and mortar. And it's interesting because we got some pushback during this public comment period about, well, they should be able to set up the brick and mortar themselves and do delivery. That seems to me to get flying to the face of trying to create a low barrier to entry in terms of capital. So this is really complicated.
Yeah.
I hate to keep saying that, but this is really complicated.
Well, no, I mean, we know historically that access to capital for business startup, especially for businesses that over time reach, you know, larger revenues, like over $1 million, the kind of capital that's available to people of color, for example, is really, really small.
Right. Particularly people of color that are trying to start up a business that is federally illegal.
Right. So as it's today, as I understand it, out of the 318 license applications under review, 10 are what are called economic empowerment applicants, which are applicants who would represent essentially underrepresented or disproportionately affected by previous marijuana laws.
It's not quite. 10 are people that got prioritization in April of 2018 based upon some criteria about their living in communities or being personally harmed by marijuana prohibition. So that's only the 100. Those are the people that got prioritized. But we have general pool applicants that are from those communities, that are minorities, that are women, that are veterans.
And so what is the number on those general pool applicants?
I don't have them in front of me. It's not where it needs to be. So I'm not going to make that case. But it's more than 10 out of 300. You know, it's about 10% in terms of minorities. And people of color, women represent a similar percentage. We are working really hard, but we're not yet where we need to be. And I believe the single biggest part of it is lack of capital or lack of access to capital.
Now, under the proposed regulations, if I understand it correctly, for the first 2 years, you would give preference to economic impact applicants for home delivery.
And for social consumption.
Okay.
For both.
Oh, for social consumption.
For both.
And
it's explicitly to address the issues that you were just talking about. So we've given priority to people that meet the criteria around disproportionate impact. We have reduced application fees, in some cases eliminated application fees. We've reduced license fees. We have a social equity program where we're providing training to people that meet these criteria. So we're doing a lot of things, and we'll continue to keep doing as much as we can. But at the end of the day, I am concerned that if we can't help these people get access to capital, we are not going to meet our objectives. And I think that, to me, is an incredibly important issue that I think We need help from the state. We need help from cities and towns. We need help from the private industry. And I'm working, we all are working incredibly hard on that, because that to me is the key to get to where we need to on this topic.
There was an idea at one point, I think it was right around the time of the Globe Spotlight series, and the idea was to provide essentially an interest-free loan fund that was backed by marijuana taxes.
Yes.
Where is that idea? Are there other financing ideas out there now that you could advance? I mean, because this is sorry we don't have the money. I mean, could shut down an entire dimension of entrepreneurs that were core to the argument for why we should do this.
Well, we're going to get there. I am perhaps naively but completely optimistic and certain we're going to get there. So to specifically answer your question, Senator Chang Diaz, who is the co-chair of the Joint Cannabis Policy Committee between the House and Senate, she has a piece of legislation that she sponsored as part of the budget to create a state-funded low or zero-interest fund for these candidates. She put it in as an amendment to the budget. It did not pass, but she is still working on that legislation, and I'm supporting it as this commission any way we can. So that's one solution, one part of the answer. Second is several of the banks that are participating in this industry right now, they're only doing cash management. They have expressed an interest in finding a way to lend into this industry. So that's in process. Several of the private companies that have licenses have said they're trying to figure out a way to do this. So there's, as I said, it's going to have to be the state, the commission, cities and towns, private industry, all collectively working on this problem. And the good news is there's a lot of energy. It hasn't come to fruition yet. But that's why I said I'm really optimistic. There are enough people working on this and enough people that are convinced we have to do this. We're going to get it right.
Do you think there are other key steps that the Cannabis Control Commission needs to take itself to merit that optimism, right, to get to that place where it's happening?
I think we're open-minded about anything. As I said, we have created prioritization for these candidates. We have reduced or eliminated licensing and application fees. We have the social equity program providing training. I and others on the commission are working closely with the legislature on the legislation we just talked about, as well as working with private industry, as well as working with the banks. So, you know, I'm open-minded. I'll take any suggestions on this topic.
Okay.
I think it's going to happen. As I said, I think there's a lot of good energy. I'm a private sector guy until I took this job 2 years ago, and it just takes a while sometimes to get things done. But I think there's enough both goodwill and energy on this that we're going to get there.
And is it moving at a speed that you feel comfortable with? And
like anything else, I would love to see it move faster. And I'm frustrated that sometimes it takes as long as it does. But, you know, it is what it is. The good news is that there's energy and we're making progress. The bad news is we're not where we need to be yet. But I'm tenacious. The other commissioners are tenacious. We're going to get this done.
All right. Let's talk about social consumption, which is much more like we come together in a shop to consume marijuana socially together. People like to call them cannabis cafes or bud bars. Your commission is moving forward with regulations around these sites. What kind of measures are you supporting for two things? One, to make sure people aren't overserved or if they don't drive high when they leave.
Yeah. So that's obviously, those are both really important issues. So we have in our draft regulations, and again, these could be debated and changed as we finalize them over the next couple of weeks, but in our draft regulations are requirements for training the staff, for staff communication to customers, particularly on edibles. The problem with edibles is that they take a while sometimes to have an impact, and so you might take some, think you're not really seeing any impact, take more. So training the staff to communicate with consumers, putting caps on the amount anybody can buy at any point in time any session sitting in a cafe, training the staff. And this is analogous to alcohol, about training the staff to recognize intoxication and to proactively help those people not drive and find other methods of getting home. We heard a lot of comments on that during the public comment period that we just finished, and we'll tweak those as necessary. But both of those issues we think we are addressing through regulations.
You know, when I waited tables in a bar, in college, and one of the things they put the fear of God into me about was you serve someone too much alcohol and they go out and drive a vehicle and kill somebody. You're potentially liable yourself. Yeah. Where does that kind
that,
of
that would require
fall?
Legislation. I don't think that's something we can do through regulations. I would be more than happy to discuss that with legislators if they. But I think Yeah, if it works in alcohol, I think it's something that's absolutely worth considering with respect to cannabis. Short of that, I think, as I said, we can provide training and we can provide guidance to applicants. I think that any social consumption applicant knows that if they have a problem in this regard, they're not going to get renewed. So, you know, I up to this point, I think our licensees have done a really good job. We've had a couple of enforcement actions, but for the most part, I think our licensees take our regulations seriously and understand that we take our regulations seriously. And there haven't been a lot of people that have willingly disregarded our regulations. And I'm hoping that would be the case with social consumption as well.
So to that question of licensees, who would qualify to open a site like this?
Again, people that are either social equity applicants or people that were prioritized back in April of 2018 as economic empowerment candidates. And the criteria are basically the same. They're separate pools with some overlap. But the criteria are, do you live in one of these communities that have been disproportionately impacted by previous marijuana prohibition? Do you have any arrest record because of marijuana offenses prior to legalization? Does somebody in your family? We have net worth maximum. So there for prioritization as an economic empowerment candidate, there were six criteria. You had to meet three of them. And as I said, we gave out 133 prioritizations. Our social equity program right now has 143 applicants that have been approved.
For social consumption?
No, this is for the social equity program. A number of them want to start social consumption establishments. So, you know, we have a large number of people that we're trying to help that would be, and the reason I went through that is the eligibility for 2 years to get a social consumption license is that you are an economic empowerment candidate or you are a social equity program member.
So that then, it seems to me, would put some pretty strong pressure to make sure that a significant number of these open in those 2 years before the market essentially floods with other kinds of applicants.
And that's what we're trying to do.
All right. So when do you think the first one and maybe the first 10 social consumption sites will open?
Part of the problem is we think we need a legislative fix.
What is that?
And that's to we believe that cities and towns have to opt in to social consumption, and the Secretary of State believes that there is a law change that would allow cities and towns to opt in. That is in process right now. It is in, on the legislative agenda and being advanced.
Meaning they'd have to specifically choose to come into
social
consumption.
For social consumption. And, you know, I can't forecast that in terms of when it might get through the legislature. I think there's a lot of support for it in the legislature. So I think it's going to take a while.
Yeah,
I don't think
that
we're,
seems tense.
Well, what we're going to do, though, I think we're going to talk about whether, you know, the 2 year window, when should it start? And, you know, I think that given how long it might take to implement, that it probably shouldn't start when we pass the regulation. It should start when we issue the first license.
So you would have the power to essentially create a lag in order to keep this
Absolutely.
Rush into the market.
Absolutely.
Before...
And our intent is, you know, not just to pay lip services, but to have this two-year window where people that meet these criteria are the only people that can get these licenses. And so, we'll have that conversation. And I don't want to speak for my other, you know, my fellow commissioners. We have to vote on it. But there's we'll have that conversation.
All right. Let's quickly hit a couple of other
Sure.
subjects. I'm guessing that you're following the saga of the state banning CBD products and food. CBD does not come under
That's correct.
The Cannabis Control Commission's purview, and for our listeners to understand, it is a non-psychoactive compound that's derived from cannabis.
From hemp.
Thank you. But there's a certain irony that the state wants to follow FDA guidelines and outlaw CBD, while at the same time we're actively licensing stores to sell THC edibles, and those are psychoactive.
Yes.
So, you know, to use a colloquialism, isn't this kind of weird?
I'm not going to comment on this. It's another area. We have no jurisdiction over this.
Have jurisdiction?
I try very hard to say my job is I'm a regulator. I'm not a legislator, and I will enforce the law. So whatever the law is, I will enforce it. As a private citizen, I do think there are some issues with the way hemp is being regulated and CBD derived from hemp is being regulated. But it is not my job to be an advocate. It's my job to enforce the law.
One of the things that I feel like is really being underscored by our conversation and your answers to a lot of these questions is that there really does have to be a partnership between the legislature and the commission pretty much every step of the way for quite a while yet for implementation.
I think that's right. And the good news is I think that the legislature recognizes that. When I first got this job and went around and met people, senior legislators, they all said, look, we try to get this right, but some things we're just going to have to see how they work out. We want you to be in constant communication with us and come back to us and tell us what we need to do. And I think that's great. And my experience to date is that they have been very open-minded. And we have, as I said, the social consumption legislation is proceeding. We went back to the legislature and asked for some help clarifying our enforcement authority with respect to host community agreements. That legislation is proceeding. So I think you're right that there needs to be that partnership, but I also, my experience thus far is that that is indeed happening.
All right, so sort of last question. You are, as we discussed before we went on air, 11 days from your two-year anniversary as the chair of the commission. In an interview with Commonwealth Magazine when you first started, you referred to this endeavor as a startup. Hey,
that's
I've
right.
done startups. I know how to do startups. Do you still feel like that's the appropriate analogy,
yeah.
that this is a startup?
I think it is a startup. I think it's way more complex than starting up a business in at least two respects. One is you're starting up an industry, not a company. So it's got it's multifaceted way more than starting up an individual company. The other thing that makes it quite different than my private sector experience is that everything we do is in the public.
There you go.
And that adds a tremendous level of complexity. I think it's good. I mean, I think it's good. We have, you know, from day one when we developed a mission statement, the key was transparency. So people can disagree, and they do all the time, with our decisions, but nothing is done behind closed doors. Everything is done in public, and that certainly adds a tremendous level of complexity. And sitting here talking to you on the radio is something I never would have done in my private sector life, so that's another level of complexity.
All right, Steve Hoffman, chairman of the State Cannabis Control Commission, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Deering, and this is Radio Boston.